Hello again, welcome to the Halcyon Entrepreneurs Podcast. This episode is a conversation with three humanities graduates from Yale Nurse College. Adila and Izzy, who have started Veer360, which aims to use virtual reality technology to enhance education. And Guadalupe, her startup Ease aims to improve access to sensitive healthcare services. This episode is hosted by Tanya, who runs Women in Entrepreneurship here at Yale NUS. We hope you enjoy the conversation.
So hello everyone, thank you so much for being here today. I'm Tanya, I'm the Director for Women in Entrepreneurship under Yale NUS Women in Business. About your work itself. By really breaking it down to the problem that you started out to address, the solution that your companies offer for it, and just generally how it all began, how it worked, started all at YNC, and how it's translated out of it, and anything else that you think is important and significant to your work.
Sure, I guess like I can start off because Adila and I are kind of like a 2-for-1 deal, yeah. So I guess I can talk a little bit about problem solution, and Adila, you can talk about like I guess our origin stories and where we've been doing, what we've been doing since then, yeah. So yeah, okay. So for us, we're Veer360, which is VERE, which is virtual experience, real education, and we are a virtual reality education platform for K-12, and we currently are now trying to solve this problem of experiential learning and lack of access. So if you think about your experiential learning opportunities, such as your lab experiments, your field trips, all of these things are either very difficult to access, completely restricted because of COVID, but also previously very expensive and inaccessible and not scalable. And so what we've done is that we've developed this immersive technology platform that allows teachers to add their existing offline teaching materials, such as PowerPoint slides, choose from a library of existing content that we've developed for field trips, lab experiments, everything for the social sciences, sciences, and the humanities, and then just run the class all either for free or for paid libraries. And it requires no extra hardware whatsoever. It just requires your phone and your laptop. Yeah, Adila, you want to talk about like origin story stuff?
Yeah, sure. So hi, everyone. I'm Adila. I'm Izzy's partner. So Veer360, I think, has a very interesting origin story. So, you know, I think Izzy and I, from the very beginning, we were very interested in education when we came into YNC. And I guess we were both involved in education in different scenes and different organizations. So I guess the way Veer360 really came about was one of the summers, SIPE sent me to an innovation lab in Denmark. So, you know, from there, I started hearing about how virtual reality is very beneficial for education. And, you know, my team there started this whole plan about using virtual reality for refugee integration and education. And, you know, when I came back to Singapore, I came back with that idea because it wasn't really implemented. You know, no one except me seemed to care. So, you know, I met Izzy, interestingly, at a banking event. So we actually both wanted to go into banking somehow, even though we were interested in education. So, you know, we were like, oh, banking's going to be our career, but education is going to be something on the side. So we started discussing, you know, about how we can use virtual reality for education. And but we were like, wait up, let's focus on the banking interviews first. And, you know, so happens that we went through the final round of, preferred internship, and we both got rejected. So we were like, screw this. This December holiday, we are just going to focus on building our own company. And we did. So I think that the idea evolved a lot, and we're still going on.
That is wonderful. Thank you so much.
Guada,
would you like to go next?
Yeah, sure. So, hi, everyone. I'm Guada. I am the CEO and co-founder of Ease. Ease is a digital health startup focused on sensitive healthcare services. So we focus on things like sexual and reproductive health right now, and we offer birth control access to birth control pills, to STD testing, contraception, sexual health consultations. So I guess I can share a little bit about how it started. I used to be president of G-Spot, and we used to host a lot of like female sexuality workshops. And in those like circles of women, I realized that there was a huge demand for like better access to sexual reproductive health. I had had like bad experiences myself with like just like gynies and also GPs not understanding like birth control and just sort of criticizing my own personal choices. And I thought it was just like a cultural shock of like, you know, in Argentina everything is still like accessible and like people things. So I just like brush it off like, oh, it's just like my own experience. But then when we started hosting these workshops, I realized that a lot of people didn't have like knowledge about like contraceptives, didn't know where to access them, had had really bad experiences with GPs. And so in like September of last year, I started thinking of how we could sort of revolutionize the way that we think about sexual and reproductive health and also how we access them. And then my partner and I started sort of working on partnerships. So finding out like lab partnerships, pharmacies, doctors, and sort of bringing together a network of people that were able to make these things just much more affordable and convenient. And we launched in May of this year. So it took a while because our at-home STD test kits took quite a long time to get approved by HSA. We wanted to make sure that our platform was in line with like what MOH was expecting in terms of like, you know, telemedicine. We launched in May and it's been around like 22 weeks, I think now. And we've gathered, well, I mean, there are like 1,000 members in our platform. It's growing a lot every week and we're super excited to just keep launching more products and more services that help people.
So I think to follow up with that, what are some of the skills that have proved to be the most helpful throughout the starting in your own enterprise? And we know that it's usually a really long process, right? Whether it be in terms of ideation, which I know took place at different times in different ways for y'all, but from moving on to pitching and then everyday operations. And it'll be great if you could trace them back to Yale and US, but also those skills that surprised you or even know were necessary.
You guys can go first.
Yeah, sure. Okay, I'll take a whack at it and give everybody else some time to think. So I think like to speak in line with the topic of today's conversation of like humanities and entrepreneurship. So I was an Atho student with WADA actually this year. We graduated. And so for me, actually, there's a lot of different skills that go into being an entrepreneur, of course. Like it's one of the rare jobs where you have to do everything and have to be kind of skilled in everything. And so very broadly speaking to YNC, like that's YNC prepares us for this kind of things, right? Where you're meant to just pick up things that you didn't know on the fly and try to like do your best of your ability, make judgment calls on how to learn better. And so things like finance, things like legal, operations, marketing, all these things we just learned on the go. And then Adila and I were just like there to support each other through our learning process. But as an Anthro student, I guess I would like to think it's like kind of slightly unique to Anthro, but what I found really surprising was a lot of the work in framing and communication to like investors, for example. So Adila and I are in the we're fundraising for our pre-A round. And so that means talking to a whole lot of VCs every day. And what that meant for us is like, you know, formulating our pitches. And what I learned is I was starting my journey with the company when I was in an LOA and I had just turned to an Anthro major. And, you know, I was really struggling with essay writing and like formulating what is a good message and how do I formulate it in the right way, because Anthro is all about like the specific words that you use. And if you use a different word, even if it's slightly tangential, it means something completely different. And I could see that in my investors and then my pitches to them, because when I say something like it's the difference between saying we're like massive growth to like sustainable growth, like those are two very different things, where even though the connotations can be very similar. And I saw that as I was doing more pitches, my essay writing got better as well. Because I was able to see like, okay, intentional writing matters no matter who your audience is.
So I think in general, I definitely agree with everything Izzy said, right? Especially about like what YNC prepared us. I think there's particularly two things that I can trace back to YNC and, you know, credit YNC's training in helping me run the startup right now. I think the first one is really, I guess it goes back to the YNC culture where, you know, we do not really care so much about hierarchy. And I think it's a lot about networking. So doesn't matter if like you're an a freshman and you know you're talking to this very accomplished professor, like, you know, you're encouraged to network with them, you're encouraged to talk to them. And I think that is something that has really helped me specifically, I would say, in the fundraising process as well, because, you know, we are talking to all these like big investors, and even I guess the first act of reaching out to them is something I guess I probably wouldn't dare to do if I didn't come to YNC and if I didn't experience like the culture where, you know, it teaches me that you gotta speak up, you gotta go to people and even if you do not have much to offer to them. So I think that it has something that is something that has definitely helped me. I think particular to history, I think I've noticed this in my work quite often recently. In history, you know, you talk a lot about your sources and you look to different sources to make a decision, or you look to different sources to actually come up with a conclusion. And I think I do that a lot in, my work at VIA360 as well. Like usually if I want to form an argument, if I want to form like a conclusion on investor meetings, I would probably look to like the impression I got from like four different investors, and I'll be like, I think this is a common trend. And I think history has kind of prepared me to categorize things and to actually find trends between different things. And I think that is something that's not just useful for fundraising. I think it's useful to see your clients' behaviors and patterns as well. I think it's very useful for hiring as well.
Nice. I think like for me, two things as well. One, I think that, it's a bit of a buzzword, but Anthro really does help you to like deconstruct everything that you know. And I do think that, building something in which we were trying to like, I guess in which you're trying to figure out like what the pain points are, and how does the industry currently works and how can it be better, right? There's a whole process of figuring out like what are the institutions involved, how do they work, what processes are they involved in, how can these processes be better, and just like deconstruct everything you know about in terms of like in this case it was healthcare, right? Like, okay, what we know right now is that you go down to a GP to ask for birth control. Can this be improved through, you know, better processes, through technology, through better partnerships and networks? So I think that's one thing. And the other thing I think is that we do get a pretty, I think, interdisciplinary education at YNC that is super useful in startups, because as Izzy was saying, like, you're doing pretty much everything yourself, right? So and you're collaborating with people who are, you know, professionals in technology and professionals in like healthcare, so many different industries that you are not the best at, but you need to understand it like slightly well so that you know how they can contribute to your business, right? So I think like, it's not like I have like much knowledge from like, you know, coding and stuff to like build the platform, but from just being able to speak to people and, you know, when you're studying like QR and SI and all these things, like being able to communicate with people in those kinds of languages definitely helps, I think, build a much more robust like team in which you're able to be involved in all aspects of
Thank you so much for that. I think it also helps to put in perspective just how it all comes together, because I think as students, when we approach the common curriculum and just different parts of the YNC experience, we see them as being quite different from each other, but it's really insightful to hear about how they all sort of work together to help you in all of these different ways. And I think building off from that, what was it like? Because I think growing out of like the YNC bubble, where it's where all of us are so open to new ideas, especially since both your companies are such like revolutions in their own industry, what has that been like? Have you encountered different kinds of stigma or people who aren't as open to just hearing new perspectives? How has that changed anything at all?
I think in general, when we look at edtech entrepreneurs, you know, you see people who have worked for, you know, a decade or so and they have started a company in edtech. Sorry about that. So I think in general, that has been a struggle because, you know, you're no longer like accepted or like a celebrator in the sense where you're like young people doing something new. You're looked at, you know, with suspicion because you're like, I don't really trust you because everyone else I've seen who was contributing to this cause are not in the category as you guys are. So I think that has been a little bit of struggle, but I think in general, I guess once people see the product and once people, you know, are able to are able to actually look into the benefits of the products for students, I think then they start trusting you more.
Yeah, 100%. I echo everything that Adila has been saying, because like we regularly talk about how as like young female entrepreneurs, and also people who are very similar in our stages of life, like we experience very similar like skepticisms from people where they, you know, either treat us in very patronizing ways or, you know, believe that we don't have enough expertise in our areas. It's a real mood and it's a real struggle, guys. But actually, you know, like funnily enough, Adila Guada and I are all part of the first four batches of Yale and US. Adil and I came in the first three batches. And so at that time, Yale and US was very much still like a startup school. There wasn't like full 1,000 students. We didn't even have a senior class. We had never had anybody graduate. We were the first batch who came in when the school opened for the first time. Nobody knew what the MPH was for. Nobody knew how to use the rector's lounges or anything. So we came in very much sold on that kind of entrepreneurial spirit. And it was in the heyday of like skepticism from the world and Singapore about whether or not Yale and US should even exist. And so, you know, in a lot of ways, I like to think that we got a lot of training from the beginning about that kind of pushback that we would receive now at Yale and US with Veer 360. And I think in both instances, the take-home message is the same, is that like haters gonna hate and you just gotta keep on going, you know, like whatever to them, blinders on and move forward.
Yeah, I think for me, a few things. I think in terms of like investors, something I've learned is that, when you're a first-time founder, execution is key, right? So you do need to prove yourself in fast and you need to show traction. Like the traction needs to be really like outstanding for them to like look at what you're doing. I think especially with bigger investors or big accelerators, like they do, I mean, you will see from the list of people that they have on board that they are people who have funded maybe like 3-4 companies. And even if they have failed, at least they learn from that and they can improve in this time around, right? So I think like feedback that's like in your team, there has to be people who are experienced in different areas of the business. So in terms of operations, it would be great to have someone who has had at least experience working in, say, and in our case, it's something like, if someone had worked in Grab or Uber, stuff like that, that has that experience of like executing the delivery aspect. And if you had someone who has experience in tech, like get them on your team so that the team looks like robust enough. So that it's not just the two of you, like, or one of you of just sort of figuring it out along the way. Because I mean, at the end of the day, they are investing money on your idea, right? So it's either you prove it through the team or you prove it through execution. That's something I think I've learned the past few months. I think in terms of like our business, it was definitely hard to get like doctors and pharmacies like on board. I think people are still getting used to the idea of telemedicine. It's not new to Singapore. It has been around for a while, but I think the traditional infrastructure is still in place and that's what people rely on. And so speaking to doctors who are not bonded, meaning like they are already 7 years in into their profession, it was definitely hard to convince them to like quit their jobs or like take half of their day off to like take our consultations instead of like a hospital that pays them more, because it's just a startup, right? And in industries that are very well established, it's definitely hard to like sort of penetrate and like bring something new, right? I think in terms of regulators, I don't think our age was ever a problem. I think it was more of just trusting like that we were sort of following the guidelines, we were following what they had sort of established and that we're doing things right. And I think like proving that has given a lot of people sort of like ease of mind that we are doing things right and we know what we're doing, even if we're young or if we're just like coming into the industry without any background in medicine or sort of like any clinical background. I think in general, like I'm quite grateful that even like our bigger like partners, like in terms of laboratory and pharmacies, they have come on board like from day one since like without like, I mean, with a very different like way of doing things than they are used to. And that's just like down to how that we pitch the idea and how we propose the collaboration to go about. I think, I wouldn't say like there's a stigma maybe with regards to like how young we are or how experienced we are in terms of like partnerships, but as long as you have like a good plan and you show that you've executed and a lot of people are on board with your idea, then people will jump in as well.
I think in a way that's really reassuring to hear, because even though stigmas exist and these are very traditional industries, it's really helpful to hear about how you navigated these and the importance of having a strong team and being able to convince others of your expertise and legitimacy in these fields. I think going back to NUS and your experience at YNC, I think something else that we were wondering was just what are some of the on-campus or resources or maybe NUS resources that have been helpful for you in this journey, especially because both your ideas started off on campus, but also are there any gaps that you think you've identified and things that you think could have been done better in coming years? Also, just before we jump into that, if anyone else has any questions, please drop them into the comments and we'll be happy to take them at any point. Thank you.
So I think I can go for that. I think SIPE definitely is a huge resource. You know, I know SIPE is a controversial topic for Yale and your students, especially during our days. You have people who have good experiences with them, you have people who have bad experiences with them. I think personally, for VIA 360, they have been pretty, you know, they have been, like, we were lucky to have them on board. So there's this grant, which not a lot of people know about, called Service in the City. If I'm not wrong, it's still around. And, you know, that was the first $5,000 that we got to start VIA 360. And, you know, that's definitely one of the monetary resources that really helped us, you know, start the company itself. You know, before that, it was really an idea. I think on top of that, NUS Enterprise is a huge resource that everyone should look into if you're interested. I guess the barrier to entry is a bit higher for NUS Enterprise. So I think you should, you know, start something first, establish yourself a little bit, and then go to NUS Enterprise. Because once you go in, you'll realize that there's like hundreds of NUS students with like, you know, deep tech startups sitting there waiting to enter. So they kind of become your competition. And you know, the way I see it is that Yale NUS is really like a safe bubble. So really ideate here, try to get a little bit of grants here and there. After that, go to NUS Enterprise. It's still safe in the sense that, you know, you don't have to accelerate super fast, but the competition gets bigger. But of course, after that, you go out to the real world, you find accelerator programs outside that really help you accelerate. And then, you know, the real world really hits you. But I think generally, you know, I would say Yale and US is a really safe place for you to experiment. I think your friends and, you know, the people that you go to classes with are also huge resource that you should look towards. You know, there's people with so many different networks, there are people with so many different technical and non-technical backgrounds who can really support you as well. So I think you should really, you know, ideate in this space and really feel free to try it out. I think you had a question about gaps as well, right? So I think one gap that, you know, we see not just in YNC, but a lot of different programs as well, is that the link to your potential clients is always missing. But I think that can, you know, always be solved if you take the initiative to go and, you know, mingle with them, mix around with them. So I guess for us, our potential clients are all teachers. So I guess, you know, try to get into as many networks as possible with these teachers, even parents and students. I think that's kind of on the entrepreneur themselves to actually find networks of their potential clients to get into, to mingle with that. And it could really just start with a Facebook group. You know, if you find a Facebook group with, you know, hundreds and thousands of teachers, for example, be there, listen to what they're saying, you know, and from there move on and find mentors who are really experts in their client base.
Yeah, I feel like Adila and I, we've been together for so long, we're like of same minds right now, because like 100% everything that she said. I guess I don't just drop off on her incubation topic, right? Because to give you pictures or like a little bit like paint you a picture of what that looked like for us, we basically used everything that YNC could possibly offer us and made use of it for So when we first started the company, we needed an MVP, for example, and we used grants, we used DOS to help us get like cameras and 360 film. So they helped us get the cameras. We shot everything ourselves. And then we had to find the software to like, you know, put it all together. We used a computer lab. We had, you know, people on our team, as on Adila's point about using your friends and the teachers and professors and also your colleagues, your student, your classmates to help you with this kind of stuff. We had people on our team who basically use our content, and we like, you know, dedicated their entire capstone to help us validate the work that we were doing in a way that was kind of on a research level that we could bring to schools and investors and accelerator programs afterwards. And with that, you know, we had professors like Prof. Jean Liu, very entrepreneurial professors that we have, like, you know, Andrew Paul's another one of them, who's really looking for connections for students to do things outside. You can just tap onto them, and they're more than happy to help you fill in the gaps in networks. Because I think and going on to the point of like what's missing in a school, like as a young university, what we lack as compared to other universities is networks, and other universities would have networks to help you get clients, investors, advisors that are super easy and connecting you with people who are very established already. But because we're like, well, how many years old? We just don't have that right now. And so there's a lot of groundwork that we need to do on our own for that. But leveraging on the professor and the people that we do have is fine for the time being. And hopefully in the future, like, you know, Guada, Adila, and I will be part of making the alumni networks to make it easy for all of you guys in the future to make your own startups.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for us, like, we didn't really use much of the, like, actual resources like you guys, like the grants and the, like, actual physical, like, resources like cameras and stuff. But I would say, like, for me, the connections are definitely something that is invaluable from YNC. I think you would be surprised to how many professors would be interested in just, like, sitting down, discussing your idea, helping you find the flaws, like, helping you improve your systems. We don't have, like, a medicine in Yale and US, but we do have a lot of professors interested in public health who would be more than happy to, like, sit down and even, like, maybe come up, like, join our board of directors or something like that, to give us like guidance and support throughout like the first few months of the business. I think another thing is just the pool of like students. Like, a lot of like the people who are interning with us are students at YNC, and like it's really great because, like, I mean, I feel like we speak the same language, and like we have maybe taken even the same classes, and we have learned similar things. And if they're coming in for research stuff, I can, you know, name drop like something that we've learned together, stuff like that. So I think like definitely like it's hard to hire outside of YNC, to be honest. Like, it was hard for us to like just get people on board. And now we're slowly like sort of like putting up like advertisements and like LinkedIn and stuff like that. But the first place we went to was just like to pull students and see who was interested in coming on board for this. And the commitment and passion that I found in YNC students is really great. And it's something that you should tap into like as soon as you can, because you will be surprised with like how many people just want to help out. And I think in terms of what's lacking, I would say I felt like I've always wanted to be an entrepreneur. I've always wanted to like sort of like discuss ideas with people and brainstorm together and like sort of like change something. And I felt like that community was lacking, at least for me, throughout like my time at YNC. I think I wasn't much part of the entrepreneurship society and stuff like that, but that sort of like sense of support and just people who wanted to like work out something was not there. And I think the other thing is just like actual resources on how, I think we have like sort of sessions with Saib on like your CV and like applying for jobs and stuff like, but there's not much on like pitching and like deck building and sort of like finding partnerships and establishing like sort of networks and systems and stuff like that. And I think that's something that was lacking a bit for me. In that, I mean, these are things you learn along the way, but if you practice them in advance, I think it's much more helpful. And yeah, I guess in more people who are in this space, coming back to YNC to just share their stories like we are right now, I guess like that's as Izzy was saying, like, because we were like sort of like part of the inaugural batches, like, not, we didn't get that sort of like support. But I guess that's getting built now, so that's good.
Yeah, actually, sorry, I wanted to jump in and mention an organization that I think, aspiring entrepreneurs here would find beneficial. So Izzy and I were recently introduced to NUS Angel Ventures. So they are a group of former NUS alumni who are actually angel investors. So they are looking to invest in companies formed by NUS alumni. And, you know, the whole idea behind forming this group was that, you know, because they are, NUS alumni and you are, you know, NUS students, they will not be as critical as angel investors outside. And I think Izzy and I have benefited quite a bit from this organization. It's a new organization. So I think, you know, once you have an MVP, once you maybe have a couple of clients, look to them, see if, you guys can get anyone from their angel network to, you know, kind of come on board, be an advisor or even invest.
Thank you so much for that. I think it's also extremely helpful that you mentioned specific things that you were using, whether it be grants, resources within campus, and things that we all sort of know about but haven't tapped into as much. So I think it really frames how we approach these and think of them in our everyday lives and can make the most of them. So with that, I think Roy asked a question, which is, I think, at the back of everyone's mind, but it's, just how has the experience of entrepreneurship been influenced by your immigration status, whether you're a citizen or an international? A lot of us are on the TG, meant that every year there's like an increase in the employment past guidelines. And I think that's something that a lot of the internationals are really stressed about. So we're kind of wondering how that works with entrepreneurship. How have you been able to really show that and work through that?
I think y'all should answer this one first. Singaporean. I'm the only Singaporean on the call.
Go on, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I can share a bit. I was actually in an EP with a different company. So I was actually just thinking that Ease was going to be something sort of on the side. But it got a bit larger than I expected. And I decided to just like quit that job and just apply for an EP with Ease. I think a few things, like very technical things that I've learned, is that it's best when the company is set up quite early on, because you need to establish a good like sort of like relationship with the agencies and make sure that everything is in like sort of like in order. If the company is set up like a month before you apply for your EP, then they might have a bit, it might just be harder for them to like give you the approval. For us, we set up about a year ago, so I think that might be helping quite a bit with my application. What else? I mean, there are just like very technical things of like how the EP is applied. Like, for instance, like you can be a shareholder and an EP holder, which is, I don't know, it's something new, so not many people know about. But at this point, I'm not technically a shareholder. So I decided to just apply for my EP as an employee. That there's just a lot of very small technical things that that Saip and I are trying to figure out together as well along the way. But I mean, you can just reach out to me like privately and I can share a bit more about the process with you. It's not, I think, as simple as I don't think it was ever clear and simple from at least from what Saip had shared with me. But it seems to be going pretty well. So if you have any questions or want any tips, I can share with you privately.
I guess for me, this is a question that I think about, you know, every day. I've been thinking about it for the past year. I decided to go slightly different route than Guada. I actually decided to go for this pass called the EntrePass. So it's an entrepreneurship pass, and it actually doesn't have a minimum salary requirement. So it's very difficult to get, but I'm still in the process and it takes a long time. But essentially, I think if you guys want to look into an entrepreneurship pass, the best way to go about it is actually looking at support systems from accelerator programs. So particularly for VR360, we got into an EdTech accelerator that was supported by Enterprise Singapore. And Enterprise Singapore is the entity that actually, approves EntrePass. So I'm trying that route and I'm trying to go for that EntrePass itself. Essentially, I think the other you know, the other method, if you're really worried about, you know, if you're really worried about your salary requirements for EP and you think that your company, I think it's to also look into partner organizations or partner companies and try to strike out a deal with them to say that, you know, they in a way, like, you know, you get an EP under them, but, you know, you become a consultant to your company. So legally, you know, you're able to work for both companies, but, you know, you have to find a, you have to find another company that actually supports your vision. And, you know, these are probably companies that your members of your advisory board holds. I think those really would be the best bet you have. I think another technical thing is that I actually went to MOE and I asked if, you know, you can fulfill your TGS on entrepreneurship paths, and they actually approved that. So it's generally, you know, a matter of getting that. And really your best bet is go into these accelerator programs. The best ones you can find that are general in nature are Antler, Entrepreneur First, and definitely the smaller, more focused accelerator programs like EduSpace. There's a couple others for different verticals. Yeah, and if you, you know, if you really have particular questions, you can reach out to me as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I think it's super, super reassuring to hear this one, because I think, especially I think as international students approach this, this feels like a barrier to entry in the first place. About whether entrepreneurship can viably support you through the 3 years that you spend in Singapore. But I think it's really good to hear that, one, that there's precedent for this, other people who are doing this and have successfully navigated through it. And hopefully, as we have more batches of YNC alums, the process will get easier even from SIPES, and as we are more familiar with these frameworks and how to navigate them. I think we're coming slowly towards the end of our session today. But I think I'm wondering more about what are next steps for your company, and also advice that you have for students at Yale NUS about how they could begin. And I think something that we're often unsure about is the problem and how you identify the thing that you really care about and that one thing you want to spend all your time on. And maybe we'd love to hear your thoughts on that. And if anyone has any other questions, please share them, or you can also unmute yourself and just ask.
I think I can start. I think in terms of like next steps for us, we are looking to sort of expand the product range, increase sort of the amount of doctors we have on board, improve our technology to make it just more efficient for everyone. I guess in terms of advice, let me think. I guess in terms of advice, like I would say, like there are a lot of things to work on all the time. There are 1,000 problems to solve, 1,000 like people you want to contact. But I think like this might be just sound a bit obvious, but like just prioritizing like is super important, and making sure you're delegating stuff. I know when you're like a startup, it feels like you have to do everything because it's just like 2 or 3 of you. But if you can get more hands on board, if you will find friends who want to help, people who are interested in what you are and want to volunteer with you, people who will spread the word and help you with marketing in that way. So make sure that you're delegating stuff and that you're not taking on like everything. Like I think I like to do pretty much everything myself, from the tech to like the partnerships to marketing, but I realize I really can't, and I need to think about the long-term vision and the strategy. And that's what I think my role in the company is. And it took me like 4 or 5 months now to like figure that out. And I think now that I'm able to relax and pass on things to others, like I feel just much more focused. And I guess like if it can feel like a lot at times, like it's especially, I mean, with the EP thing and with sort of like maintaining a team and making sure that everyone's satisfied and passionate about what they're doing, just keeping staying positive and sort of like fighting through and just in knowing that there will always be another investor, there will always be another partner, there will always be a, you know, there are just so many people in the space just building stuff, and that you will always have support. I guess I wanted to say that because I feel like at points it can be just like overwhelming, but if I don't remind myself of that, then it's hard to continue. So, yeah.
Yeah. I guess I'll just quickly like do a brief overview of like where Veer 360 is going, and Adil of course will like add her own parts to that. So we just launched the web platform and our mobile app earlier this year, and we are now live in Indonesia, in the Philippines, and in Singapore. And we really want to, one of the big goals for us is really to just kind of consolidate our presence in those markets, and then going on towards beyond Southeast Asia. And that is one of the bigger goals for us. We want to be like a prominent experiential learning tech tool, and just a tech tool. We want that kind of. So that's kind of where we're going in like the broad strokes. And in terms of like advice and with regard to like also like solution refining, I think, I don't know if this is how like big of an issue this is for people, but I think that there's always this, there's a temptation to just spend a lot of time planning and refining a plan and making it look pretty and doing a lot of research, especially because like that's a lot of the stuff that you have to do to develop investor decks. And there's a lot of temptation to just focus on like fundraising and getting money to strap yourself to start this big project and that you have big plans for. But in reality, like the business is the thing at the end of the day, and the business only comes about through being like actually looked at and refined through practice. It's kind of like writing an essay. It's like something you have to sit down and constantly work at in little bits. Like, sure, you can whack something out the night before, but really, like, your real understanding of the problem will come with time and by actually doing it. So you might not have all the research in the world. That's something to be scrappy. That's totally fine. Just get out there and just try it out, because the best advice you'll get is from your clients and from your from the people you're selling to. And as Aguada mentioned earlier, like, having, as an early entrepreneur, like a young entrepreneur, having revenue and like that is the best evidence of your kind of like value as a company, that you're really something. Yeah, so just go out there and do it. Don't think so much, basically.
You know, 100% agree with whatever Izzy said. I think I'll just add on in terms of advice. I think on top of whatever Izzy said, if you're trying to start a company, you have to be obsessed with your client base, and you have to be obsessed with the problem that you're trying to solve. Like Izzy mentioned, a lot of people spend time in terms of getting, fundraising, or, getting in touch with, established people for your boards and everything. But I think the real value really comes from you being obsessed with your client base, just trying to, mingle with them, just trying to be in their midst, and, being obsessed with a problem and really finding out why does this problem exist, and, what are the little gaps that you can go in and solve. I think along those lines, I think very early on, Izzy and I also realized that, when you want supporters or people on your board or, people who are your advisors, look for people who actually know your market, and look for people who actually know your client base and your problems over people who are like well established, over people, who have a big reputation, things like that. Because, mostly people who are big investors, they generally have passing knowledge of a lot of things, but you want people who really have deep knowledge about the problem and your client base. So you would want those people on your advisory board to really help you accelerate the business itself.
Really get out there and not think as much and just go all in, but also remember to be positive and delegate things and really look at this as a team project that keeps going on. We received another question from Abdul, which is that a lot of people at YNC have great ideas. We are in a very dynamic space, but often something that a lot of people cite as almost as an excuse is that there's so much work and there's things that always have to be done one after the other. Is that a sacrifice? Is that a trade-off you thought or that you kind of dealt with? And when was the moment where you knew that you had to prioritize Vir 360 and ease?
Atypical journey, because I started with Vir 360 with Adila while I was away from school. So I was like on LOA. And so I started, I think Adila and I started this like over after the Christmas break. So I took a full year. First semester I was doing something else. And then the second semester I was working on Vir 360. So I had a fairly good idea of, an okay idea of what it meant to work on this full time. And, Yeah, so that gave me a good baseline going back into school. But I think no matter what, going to YNC, it's a bubble, and it's like it can pull at your time and attention in ways you never really imagined. Like even in the small wee hours of the morning, you wake up and you're like in YNC, and your suite mates are talking, and you talk to them, and that before you know it, it's like lunch, and yeah, and then you're like, oh, where am I going to put the time to actually work on my project? And yeah, I think. You know, Adila and I, as people who are in education and who love education, have never wanted to compromise on our educational experiences at YNC, especially in the final years. It's something that we cared a lot about and we didn't want to give up on because it was a once-in-a-lifetime experience for us. But at the same time, like, we also found ways to make sure that we prioritize VR. So, for example, for me, it was a whole lot of, like, doing underloading and finding ways to do classes in other small ways, maybe during the summer or during the breaks, but to give more time to VR 360. And then I think that the company really took off only after graduation, when we both kind of put full effort into it. So there is going to be some sacrifices that you're going to make. So, for example, if you want to be a PhD, I'm not sure. I was never very good at school to begin with, like, to be fairly honest. So maybe I'm not the best person to say this, but I suspect it would take a lot more effort to try to do both routes. You have to dedicate. Being an entrepreneur is a personality, and it's kind of it's like an all life encompassing thing. And you have to be obsessed, and you have to, like, give your all to it. You can't half-ass it.
I think on top of that, I think Izzy and I were lucky to also have each other. So, you know, in times when, I guess when we were in school, in times when there was a deadline coming, we'll always, like, you know, be like, hey, dude, like, see ya, I'll be back in a week. You know, like, let me submit this deadline thing first, right? And I'll come back to the business. So I think it's always good to have a support system, and especially, you know, I think Izzy and I are rare in the sense that we kind of, you know, we kind of look at everything at the same time. Like, we don't really have that much of a big specialization in the work that we do at VR. So kind of like, you know, if Izzy falls sick tomorrow, I can take over. If, like, I go off, you know, for a week to do my assignment, she can take over. And I think in that way, it was pretty helpful. You know, I really resonate with Izzy when she says that this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. So really also don't really ignore your schoolwork. I've seen multiple NUS students who are doing so well in their startups, and they totally, like, don't go to classes. They go to NOC for their own companies, you know. So I think, while of course, you know, you have to admire some of these people for putting in so much in their startups, but, you know, this university life is also one in a once in a lifetime opportunity, and you don't want to give up on it. Like, once you go out into the field working world, you're going to regret, you know, not spending and not learning enough in your university year. So I think it's really about a balance. Maybe you won't, you know, be a student throughout. Maybe you'll have to, like, compromise with, like, B's. But I think you shouldn't miss out on, you know, the essential experiences of college life.
Yeah, I agree. I think, like, there is a balance that you can strike in terms of, like, if you're, say, in final year and you're thinking of going into this full time, I mean, to market research, to do form partnerships, to, there are so many things that you can do kind of, like, part time. Because, I mean, the like, leading a startup and actually, as Zizi was saying, throwing yourself into it will require you to be full time. And it's hard to do that with school. But there's so many things that you can sort of, like, advance on. To make sure that the day you graduate, you're ready to literally throw yourself into the work, right? So I would say, like, build partnerships, do market research, test the market in some way, create something DIY that you can, like, test the market with. So it could be as simple as doing a bunch of surveys. It could be as simple as, like, launching a demo and trying it out with, like, a specific group of people, say 2,000 people that you want to, like, test it out with, get customer feedback, understand what the customer wants, or I guess if it's a D2C or something like that, business. But I would say, like, at least for me, like, from September when we started with the idea till May, that was pretty much what I was doing. I was just forming, getting everything ready, everything set up, so that the moment I graduated, I could just launch it and get with it and go with it. And yeah, I mean, I guess looking back, I would have wanted to jump. I remember like in September last year, I wanted to jump right in. But I did have to prioritize school. I knew that it was my last year. I wanted to spend time with my friends as well. So I just took it a bit slower, which I guess it could be bad in the sense that certain markets move really fast. I mean, telemedicine is just booming right now, right? There's so many companies like rising like right now. And I think if I look back, like, yes, technically, if I had started it in September last year, we would be at a much different position right now. But it's fine. I have a good balance, which would just be to like sort of like plan, strategize, test, research, and then just launch when you're ready. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much. We're just about to hit the 9 p.m. mark, but I was wondering if any audience members have any questions that they would like to unmute and ask. I think the comments section on Teams is a little confusing, but if you have any questions, please feel free to unmute yourself and just go ahead.
Yeah, if I could ask. So yeah, thanks so much. I took down notes of all the things that you kind of said before that like what we should have here at Yale and US, because like right now, like right before I leave Yale and US, I think like I'm running the entrepreneurship side and trying to like kind of improve things, the conditions, because I think it's really lacking at like some things, and like that's something I felt like the question I asked before. But another question is like for Veer 360 is like how's the funding? Like how do you guys settle the terms? Figure that out with investors, and what's like your vision in terms of like how you're planning to exit, or do you plan to just like maybe sell off to like a larger ed tech company, or like is that something you've thought about? I'm sure you have, but what's the vision there?
Sure, I guess Adil and I can split it. I can talk about like fundraising and terms that we're doing right now, and maybe Adil, if you're okay with that, you can talk about like where we're going later on. So right now we're fundraising. Yeah, that is like a whole job in itself. That's what they call investor relations in other places, right? Or fundraising. It is, yeah, it's quite a lot. And I think that, you know, it would be great if Yale and US had some kind of support systems for that. So right now we're raising, how do we set the terms? So you can either have your lead investor do it, and that is really just the person who puts in the most amount of money. Or if you are doing a seed round or a like pre-A round or an earlier round, if you're just doing angels, you can just set it yourself and then say like, this is what we're setting. And then you guys have to all agree on that. It really has to take on somebody. So that it really depends on the demographic of the investors that you have, and then what your power is with relation to them and the power amongst themselves. So for example, if you have like a lot of small angel investors, but one has like crazy strategic advantage because they're like directly in the market that you're working in, they have direct connections with the clients that you want to go into, maybe they can set the terms. And then you would be okay to give the terms setting ability to them, and then everybody just has to agree. It's a lot of relationship management. You have to be a very nice person and make sure that nobody's like feathers are ruffled. Legal, we have a lot of support in NUS Enterprise, actually. So NUS Enterprise provides lawyer services, which is great because that stuff is expensive. And so that's really helpful. And if we could have something like that at Yale and US, that'd be really great. But you could also just talk to, you know, us and, you know, as alumni who are going through it right now, talk to your DDP friends who are doing corporate law. That's also really helpful. My roommate, my suite mate, she's a DDP student. So I got her to look over like early subscription agreements, shareholders agreements, etc. Yeah, there's a lot of things at the schools already, but there'd be nice to be more.
Yeah, before I jump into the exit plan as well, maybe I'll add on one tip. So I guess for Veer 360, before we went to, you know, the bigger VCs, we actually did a small round, with one angel. And this was, I think, when both of us were.
I just wanted to add a super quick point. So we're fundraising as well. And I think something that I learned in the past few months is people will constantly ask you what your valuation is. And from very honest and big investors, they do tell you that actually you shouldn't share that information too early on. You should actually sort of like build a connection, convince them that it's a good idea, and actually turn the question around about how they think of valuation. So that's a good way of asking, like, for companies at our stage, how do you think about valuation in these cases? And I think it's easy to, I mean, in our case, like there are not many companies like us in Southeast Asia. So it was easy to take like the multiple that the US uses or like the way that the US calculates a valuation and sort of come up with an idea of, okay, this is the traction we have right now and where we think we're going. But at the end of the day, these are all based on assumptions and sort of like extrapolating numbers. And a lot of investors extrapolate in very different ways. So it's important that you actually don't give that information away too early on. You explain what you're looking for, but you have a conversation about it. Because I think like once you say it, it's difficult to take it back. They will stick to that number. And if they cannot afford it, they will just like not continue the conversation. But it's better to just get a sense of where they think you stand. And I know that as Adil would say, like they can take advantage of you. But I think, again, it's a conversation. But if you frame it as a conversation, it's better than you saying a number and that's what sticks with them. So yeah, just a very technical small thing. But
thank you so much for your time, for your patience and for sharing so many things with us today. And I think hearing your experiences and hearing you reflect on your time at Yale NUS, but also after, and hearing about the ways your companies have grown is really inspiring for all of us. And knowing that you're so accessible and so helpful and open to feedback is really, really reassuring. So thank you so much for being here today. And thank you to our audience members for tuning in. We're excited to have you on campus when we can meet in person. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Thanks for coming.
Minimum valuation, because if you go to the bigger investors with the, you know, your bigger traction later on, right, I guess there's a lot of space for you to be taken advantage of in terms of your valuation. You know people could be saying that actually I don't think you're worth this much, but when you, once you have a smaller investor who has come in and you have already, you know, have, you already have a minimum floor of your valuation, you will never go beyond that. So I think in general, it's important to get, even if it's like, you know, $10,000 or $20,000 in the initial stages from an angel, just make sure you're not giving up too much equity. But I think if you can find a strategic investor who is just, you know, there just to support you and maybe build connections for you, but they're only giving you like $10,000 or $15,000 or even $20,000, right? I think it's important to form that, you know, valuation floor for yourself. I guess in terms of exit plans, I think we do get this question quite a bit. I think in general, our sense is that we're not building this business to flip it. You know, we're building this business because we see a problem there and we do want to solve this problem. But I think eventually, of course, IPO is an option for, you know, every business. And I think that's one of the options for us. But we also look towards bigger education organizations that have multiple software under them. So, you know, our software could be bought over as another additional product. So they can, you know, they have a bigger outreach. You know, they can bring this product out to other organizations. So I think that's also an exit plan for us. I think in general, we are, you know, thinking about it. There's also a lot of big tech companies that are going into education right now, but they're not really able to penetrate the Southeast Asian markets or even the South Asian market. So I think if you're able to do that, there's also another exit route where, you know, they can buy us over too.
Yep. Thanks so much.